Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com, continuing our series on the last 40 years of Illinois basketball. My guest today is Will Leach. Will was a student during these years. I'm trying to get people who were living it at the time, and you were certainly living it. So I got there in fall of 91. Will, welcome to the show. You got there fall of 93, correct?
Yes, I graduated from, first off, thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this series. Mm-hmm. I loved the first two, and I will do my best to lower the level of discourse from the last two during a more callow time in Illinois basketball history. Yes. But yeah, I graduated from Mattoon High School, an hour south of Champaign in 1993. If anyone that remember back in the day, if you lived in Central Illinois, all the games were on WCIA. So that was kind of the glory of that, before ESPN Plus, before Big Ten Network, before all of that stuff. Literally all the games were on Channel 3, WCIA. They would interrupt whatever show happened to be on to show often Dan Rohn, and right. sometimes Lauren Tate, mm-hmm. sometimes I think, I don't know if Aldenberger had started yet by that point, but I watched all of these games because not to disparage the social life in Mattoon, Illinois, in the early 90s. It's actually hop more hopping than that is now. But I watched a lot of basketball with my dad.
On a Thursday night in Mattoon, there was Illinois.
That's back when we were in the Big 12. That's back when we were in the Big 12 before we got shifted to the Apollo with such a sad little schools like Charleston and Taylorville. Mm-hmm. That was back when we were in the big days. Back when Stephen Decatur was still a high school. back in the good old days.
That's right. That's right. The Green Wave, right?
The
Mattoon Green Wave.
Yes. It is worth noting that. Yeah. So I know that we're starting with 92-93, which was my senior year of high school. But trust me, I watched, if you can make an argument, I watched more games that year than I did my sophomore year, because there was a lot of drinking by my sophomore year. Yep. But in high school, I was still behaving. But by sophomore year of the Daily Illini, it gets a little hazy in there.
Yeah. So the setup to this season is obvious. And if you listen to the last episode, you know, this is where we got. My freshman year was 91-92, which was the last season that Tyler and I covered last week. And so 91-92 was the full brunt of the Bruce Pearl sanctions. The scholarships had been limited. You couldn't recruit off campus. You only had two scholarships for two consecutive classes. You're on 3-year probation. No visits. You couldn't go visit any players. You couldn't go watch an AAU tournament. You couldn't go do anything. So, you know, the roster kind of fell apart. But as we let off last week, there was a recruiting win in there of Richard Keene, picked Illinois over Duke. He was a 5-star player. He was a McDonald's All-American. He was a top 15 guy. And that coming into this season offered a little bit of hope that, hey, there's, you know, after that long run in the 80s of getting the best players from Illinois, Illinois got the best player from Illinois again, and maybe this valley won't be too deep. So that 91-92 season was ugly, and it went 13-15, and there was just times of no offense, and if a team had a big guy to take out Dion, there were basically no options. 92-93 began, you know, well, gosh, it may have been the best team that we'll talk about. Maybe 97 is, but this might be of the five teams we're going to talk about today, this might be the best team. I don't know. Just generally thinking of this era, how do you feel about that?
I would say they certainly had the most exciting moment of these 5 years, which I'm sure we'll get into. Yep. I you guys touched on this a little bit before, but you know, I always had an emotional attachment to Tom Michael back in the day, our next door neighbor, that he, of course, with Carlisle, and they had won the state championship his senior year, because in like Class A, I don't think there was anyone taller than 6'1". So he just dominated everybody. So so I was actually there to watch them play at the hall to win the state championship. So I was super excited to watch Tom Michael. I feel like Tom Michael as a player is generally a little underappreciated, which is to say, like, when Dion was – When Dion was not triple teamed or quadruple teamed, there was really only one guy that could score, and that was Michael, who's a great 3-point shooter. And I think what speaks well to the 92-93 team is you started to see, like, you saw, like, Michael lost 10 points off his average, which is a good sign. No offense to Tom Michael, but that's a good sign that that they had more guys to score. Keen was a big thing, you know. Keen was obviously a big recruit from Collinsville, obviously, but you know, it definitely, as I look back at it today, it definitely feels like Keen, he had his moments for Illinois. I think there was always a sense that there was a little bit, because he was so hyped and he was so, he was so Duke. That in a way that didn't quite feel right. Andy Kaufman always felt like more of an Illinois type of player, or TJ Wheeler, for example, than Richard Keen. I remember when my first assignments for the Daily Illini the next year was to cover a fraternity basketball game. That's why, that's how you cut your teeth at the Daily Illini. And it was the Pikes. He was a member of the Pikes. I covered a Pikes game and Richard Keen was there. And he refused to give me an interview, saying, "Your newspaper is stupid and I don't want to talk to you." And I was like, all right. See, I'm 17, you know, I still think of these guys as my heroes. And I always felt like Keen was a little sour after that. So this team was good. I mean, you know, the we talked about the moment. The moment is obviously that Kaufman shot against Iowa. I was working at the Cinema 123 in downtown Matteson, Illinois, now replaced by a multiplex like everything else in the in the country. But I was so excited when he hit that shot. I jumped up and hit my head on the ceiling and knocked myself out. It was very, very excited off a small black and white television with rabbit ears watching WCIA. That was clearly the great moment of really the arguably these 5 years. And that was the thing that gave, this was the year that gave you a little bit of hope going in, that it felt like, as you said, you kind of got through the worst of the recruiting problem. You got Keen, you had Thomas's all-time player. There was a lot of hope kind of moving forward in there. And there were even, like, you know, there were some folk heroes. I remember once playing in Gus Macker 3-on-3 against Steve Roth. I'd not do well. There were cult heroes around this time. But, like, you know, a couple of years before this, as you guys talked about, I mean, they were playing like Will Tuttle and other walk-ons, like, on a pretty regular basis. It felt like you were back to being, like, the fact that Tom Michael was scoring 10 points less was a sign that something was pointing in the right direction.
Correct. You got, so for my freshman year, 91-92, that was the year Andy Kaufman was suspended academically. So getting Kaufman back for this year was big. You did bring in Keen and Chris Gandy from Danville. And you had everybody.
He's from Bradley Bourbonnais.
And then
I know because he was best friends. He was really good friends with my girlfriend, who also went to Bradley
Bourbonnais.
Out to Jessica Simmons. Shout out to Jessica Simmons. Hope you're doing well wherever you are.
Yes. So you have Dion coming back. You have more pieces that allow teams to not triple team Dion. It started to come back together as a team. Wasn't ranked. I don't believe ranked the entire year. Let me look at this. Wasn't ranked. Weren't ranked at all the entire year, but did have a decent Big Ten season. Did have those wins. Finished second in the Big Ten, and did, you know, get to the tournament and win a tournament game. So just in general. I'm just going to go through the season because we got to get to the Iowa game because that's the thing to talk about here. But in general, that season starts with the Great Alaska Shootout. You're out in the middle of nowhere in Anchorage for a Thanksgiving tournament that used to happen the same time as Maui and everything else. At that tournament, again, continuing the theme we talked about last week, for some reason, or talked about 2 weeks ago, so many times during this era, we played the team that we would then lose to in the NCAA tournament. You know, we played Villanova in Hawaii and then in 88 and played Villanova in the tournament. We played Kentucky in December in the snow game in 84 and then lost to Kentucky in the tournament. Here, we beat Vandy in Alaska. Vandy is the team we will then lose to with Billy McCaffrey in the tournament. But we did beat them pretty handily in Alaska. But then I remember the disappointment of this game. Hey, we beat Vandy. I want to say they were like ranked 20th at the time or something like that. So it was like a big win. I'm like, oh, hey, maybe this is going to be something. Yeah. And then we lose to – Lou loses to his school, New Mexico State, in, in the final of the Great Alaska Shootout. And it was a little tempered with, okay, well, maybe we're not maybe this doesn't just turn around again immediately. So we come back home. You had those December games.
I'll interject for the fun part about those games, too. They scored over 90 points in each of those first two games. So you're like, wow, all right. Like, I remember thinking that they had this after having basically two dudes who could score to suddenly have this offensive firepower was even in that loss was pretty exciting.
Yes, because in that 91-92 season, like, I remember the Missouri game, the Bragging Rights game for my freshman year. So I guess it'd be December of 91. We scored 42 points, 44. Like there were points for that team the year before that you just couldn't score. Like you were, you know, you were, please don't let us finish in the 30s kind of a game. And so, yes, you're right. It was offensive firepower. And, you know, you start getting points from TJ Wheeler and you start getting other things. And you come home, you win the Illini Classic, of course, never lost in the Illini Classic. And then the Bragging Rights game. So this is after 8 years of winning, you lost in the 91 Bragging Rights game. This is 92 and it's another loss, which I remember again, I was there, lost by one. It's not as painful as the one we'll get to next year, but, lost that one and then lost at Texas. I remember that one cause they got kind of blown out at Texas. Then came home to Marquette and lost that. So after all of this, hey, maybe pretty good. Hey, we, you know, even scored, you know, 88 in this game and 79 in this game. Maybe things have turned around. There was that three-game losing streak going into the Big Ten. So do you go ahead.
Yeah, this is also a time where I think a lot of us thought their best player this year was going to be Richard King. Because he was just like great. Yep. Like obviously like Dion was going to be the guy that you stuck with. But you know, the idea to get Keen, like to get a recruit like that was, it felt like he was going to be a superstar and he was pretty definitively not. And it wasn't like he was worthless to any stretch of the imagination. He certainly had plenty of his moments, but I do think that was, you know, that was where you kind of realized you had to kind of temper expectations, not just for him, but really for the whole team. It was going to kind of be, the Dion send-off here.
Yes.
In a way that, and he was, I mean, you look at his numbers. I mean, he was incredible this year. And, you know, but to me, a lot of it is the electric guy, the guy we thought King was going to be, was Kaufman.
Yes.
And Kaufman was, you know, he was, oh, it's funny. There is a very, I don't know if you saw it a couple of years ago. Kaufman showed up. It was before the pandemic, and Kaufman showed up at a game, and I saw it on Twitter, and I was like, "Wow, it's kind of remarkable that Andy Kaufman has grown into every Illini fan that I see." he looks like he definitely. And I say that out of love. All my family looks the same way, but he definitely he felt like Richard Key looked like a Duke dude.
Yep.
Andy Kaufman looked like an Illinois guy, 100%. And in a way that he was infuriating. Mm-hmm. He could be infuriating. Mm-hmm. He was particularly infuriating because a lot of times he would do something kind of crazy when you're like, just throw it into Dion. We've literally watched this for 3 years. We know how this works. Yep. Get it into Dion and he'd do something kind of crazy. But, you know, that was something that they had not had maybe since Gill or maybe Anderson to have a guy, just a pure scorer. There's a pure scorer in that kind of freezing Midwestern gym on a February night. Sort of way that I think really met the personality of that team. And he was a polarizing player because, you know, he was a lot.
Yes.
he was a lot to deal with. And, but I do think that, there was a stretch where he really felt like the whole personality of that team.
For younger fans who weren't around at the time, I feel like the best way to describe that team or describe Kaufman, so you have to picture we have a top big man who can score at all times. So when just picture a game you're watching and you the other team's on a 7-0 run, and you're like, okay, get it to Deion. He can get us points. He's going to get fouled. He's going to go to the line. Just, we need to get this game back on track, get it to Deion. And Andy was the player who would shoot in that moment all the time. So probably the leading no, yes player in Illini history, because so many times, you know, he's just missed three threes. He comes down and he pulls up and you're like, no, this is no. And then it goes in. You're like, oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's going to catch fire. Now he's going to get four threes in a row and we're going to be right back in this game. So, yeah.
And there's something culturally, I think, that still exists about Illinois basketball fans that don't like guys like Coffin.
Yes.
They love Matt Hellman. Love Matt Hellman, right? And whatever. I love Matt Hellman. Mm-hmm. Like I obviously know we'll talk about Matt Hellman in a bit, but, certainly, Kaufman is the sort of guy that calls into the post-game radio show and saying, see, these kids don't have any fundamentals.
Yes.
And Kaufman was absolutely that kind of guy. But I got to say, when they finished 19 and 13 this year, there's no way they make the tournament without Kaufman.
Not a chance.
Not a chance. And particularly because Keen is a little bit of a disappointment. Is a little bit of a disappointment. Rennie Clemons kind of comes along a little bit as the season goes along.
Yep.
But Michael takes a big step back. You really kind of had to have Kaufman be that guy for them this year, or they would have gone – they were going nowhere. He feels a little bit like I do not remember going into that season being like, all right, we're adding Kaufman to Deion Thomas. This is going to be a tournament team.
Yep.
It was definitely Keen. Yes. Keen was the guy, but it turned out that Kaufman was the one that really got them where they needed to go.
Yeah, and I kind of want to point out that so a lot of times when people talk about the Kaufman shot, so let's get to it now. Mm. When people talk about the Kaufman shot, it's like, you know, a lot of people were like, why was that such a big deal? And I always explain it two ways. One, obviously, Bruce Pearl. Obviously, we are bad. We have these recruiting restrictions because an Iowa coach literally recorded one of our recruits in the middle of the night when he called him and woke him up and tried to turn in Illinois for, you know, recruiting improprieties because the kid had picked Illinois and not Iowa. But number two, it was also this return to, you know, I equate it to the Iowa, Michigan State shots, the Dan Dockich, this won't end well for Illinois, and then Iowa makes it. That wasn't a good season, and that happened in 2019, but it was this, holy crap, we just beat Michigan State, and we have a star who can nail a shot, and are we starting to be back kind of moment. Of like, wait, this is, you know, it's been so long, we've been waiting for this. That's what it felt like in 93. So you start the season, you start the Big Ten season, you win the games you think you will, you go on the road, you lose to number 5 Michigan, you lose to number 6 Indiana at home, you're probably going to lose those games, but you win these other games, but you're beating teams like Penn State or Northwestern, who you're probably supposed to beat. Then you get a home game in early February against number 9 Iowa. I'll just go through my memories of the game. I wasn't there. I had an event. It was a Thursday night, I remember. I had an event, a fraternity event, and I did that and then watched the game in the basement of the fraternity house. B, it was the thing people always forget about this game is that the winning, or the what we thought was a winning shot for Iowa, went in off of Deion Thomas's arm/shoulder/elbow. It was him fighting for a rebound with, who was the big? AC Earl? I can't remember. I'm going to look that up. But Deion's struggling for a rebound. It bounces off AC Earl. Yes. It bounces off of his shoulder, kind of upper arm, and goes in. So more or less, Deion scored on his own basket, just a total freak bounce off of his shoulder. And so now there's 2 seconds left, and Iowa just took the lead, and what's going to happen? And I'll let you, you know, share your memories of what happened next.
Yeah, well, again, I my job at the movie theater was back before there were digital prints of everything. My job was to put all the reels together into one on the platter. Mm-hmm. And I think if memory serves correctly, I think the Madonna movie, sex movie, Body of Evidence was the one that was playing around that time. If you can believe that, with her pouring a hot wax on Willem Dafoe's genitals.
Were there protests in Mattoon, Illinois?
I feel
why
like,
are
like,
you showing
it was Madonna, like it was like it was just like whatever. And Julianne Moore's in that movie anyway, so I was watching, I think I was probably late to start the movie because I was watching the end of that game, and then just it was the thing that was great about that moment was not just that it was Kaufman and a great throw by Wheeler, mm-hmm. by the way, to throw that ball in, but it felt like, what did we want more than anything from this year's team? We wanted to feel like the good times were going to be back.
Yes.
And that shot was great. But also, I mean, you couldn't help but remember Nick Anderson's shot, right? Like, mm-hmm. seeing that shot, it made you feel kind of special. Mm-hmm. It made you feel like, oh, the special moments are happening for Illinois right now. And so, yeah, to do it over Iowa was great. To do it over a top 10 Iowa was great. But I also think there was something about it that conjured up the memories of that Indiana shot, the good old days, the things where, yep. but before it was almost a way to show Iowa that, like, yeah, you can try to stop us, but we're coming back. That wouldn't, yep. It would not turn out that way. Right. But that was a level of excitement about it that I think was a part of it.
Yeah, 100%. And we, I mean, it gets lost, but they were top 10 that year. Like, they were that was a good Iowa team, who was ranked and we were unranked. So it wasn't just beating Iowa for the second year in a row at home. It wasn't just getting Bruce Pearl revenge. It was a win over a top 10 team at home that felt like Illinois basketball. And it did. I mean, that season is so up and down. I remember that Pitt game on the weekend. I feel like, I believe my dad came up and we went to that game together. We lost at home to number 17 Pittsburgh. It was this kind of opportunity to win. Then we went at Indiana, who was number one by the time it got blown out. I believe that was the Calvert Cheney, Eric Anderson Indiana team. And so it was, we had built this momentum, and then we just kind of bounced back and forth. We did beat Purdue in double overtime at home. That was a big win, but then you lose 4 of 5 to end the big, you got to 10-3 in the Big Ten, which was a big deal. I thought we were going to be ranked after that Purdue game. But then you lose at Wisconsin, at Minnesota, you lose at home to the Fab Five in overtime. I mean, I remember that game pretty well. Do you have memories of that, losing to the Fab Five in overtime in early March?
I do remember that game, and mostly I remember, like, that team, come on. I mean, I was an Illinois fan, but how did you not love the Fab Five, right? Like, that team, they were, like, glorious villains. Like, I obviously wanted Illinois to win, yep. but it felt cool. Like, that Fab Five team was such a big deal. And if those have not seen the 30 for 30, you should definitely watch the 30 for 30 about the Fab Five. That felt as close as the Big Ten had to, like, this awesome traveling road show.
Yep.
Where it was really just – It felt like not unlike The Last Dance, right? Where every single time the Bulls were in town, it was the biggest sporting event in sports that night. That Michigan team kind of felt that way. And so for Illinois, the Illinois lost, and it was a frustrating loss, but you felt good about a loss like that.
Yes, yes. And it was, gosh, as I remember, I need to look this up. I need to find a play-by-play of that game. As I remember, I think it was the end of regulation. I believe it was Keene hit a pass on the wing to Bennett, but Robert Bennett just wasn't looking at first. He was kind of running the baseline to get in there for a rebound because maybe it was Rennie, but somebody was driving the lane and did a little quick little underhand dish to Bennett, but he wasn't fully ready. Ball went through his hands and out of bounds. As I recall, I mean, like, my memory, which could have been influenced by many other things I've seen in the last 30 years. My memory is, like, we were going to get a big dunk from Bennett on the baseline with 10 seconds left and win the game. Went out of bounds, and I believe that's when we went to overtime. I hope it wasn't in overtime because we were down by one. I don't think it was that, but I remember we were so close to beating the Fab Five, but lost in overtime at home. But
Robert Bennett had awesome dunks, by the way. Robert Bennett was a ferocious dunker in like a Sean Kempian sort of way.
Yes, we're in a crazy, 5-year period of jumpers, and like we'll get to Bryant Notre in a bit. Like, Notre had the best hops of any Illini player ever. Let's see, Avi Story, was he in this? I think he was like 97, right?
Maybe at the end. Yeah.
Crazy hops. And Robert Bennett was the same, like, could jump, take a quarter off the top of the backboard or whatever, these were these kind of players, more athletes than basketball players, but still you can use guys like that. So again, the season ended sour. You know, you got 10-3 in the Big Ten, but you only finished 11-7 in the Big Ten. But it still led to getting a six seed in the tournament, which is a pretty big deal. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
You play the six.
See, it seems too high in retrospect, to be entirely honest.
Yes. I can tell you everything about this tournament game. I can tell you everything about the Long Beach State game. Long Beach State had Byron Russell, who would become famous later for being who Jordan took the shot over and kind of shoved him out of the way a little bit.
Or being pushed off by a megalomaniac. Yeah. Yes, that would be another way to put it. Yes.
It had what's the guy's name? Harris. Anyway, Long Beach State was pretty good that year. It was a tough game. I just went through this in the podcast I did with Mark Davidson about this. And he mentioned, again, I always mention that as the Mark Davidson game because he had three offensive rebounds in the second half that kept us in it, two putbacks and got fouled on one of them. And then it was his highest point output, highest rebound output in months. And you'd need that one guy doing that one thing to win NCAA tournament games. And we did. So I remember watching that game. I remember everything about it. Did you? I guess you weren't DI yet, so you weren't traveling to cover this. You're still in high school here. This is your senior year of high school.
Do you remember that?
Because I believe it was an afternoon game. I'm going to say it was like a 3 p.m. or 4 p.m.
I feel like it was that middle game. I feel like it was that middle game. That's like the transition game from the day games into
the
night games.
Yes, that's the one exactly they, the what one I remember.
They,
yes.
Yeah, the one they had against Brandon Roy a few years later when they played that game against Washington. Yeah, that was also in that like middle spot game.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And it is funny to look back and think, wow, Illinois played Long Beach State. Illinois had zero NBA players and Long Beach State had two.
Yes.
It is really kind of remarkable to two pretty good ones. Byron Russell was the lower draft pick the next year. So
that's true.
It's a nice touch.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get past that and then setting up this rematch with Vandy. Again, this is a Vandy team is really good. They're a three seed. Billy McCaffrey could shoot lights out, but Illinois had beaten Vandy by, 16 in Alaska? As I remember from that game, it just wasn't. Vandy started out hot and just ran away with it.
Yeah, and you talk about a game where, like, the old-timers calling into WDWS after being really bad, really angry. Deion Thomas got six shots in this game.
Yes.
And Andy Kaufman and Richard Keene, when it combined 2 for 16 from three-point range.
Yes.
That's
not,
a really, really
– yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 2 for 20 if you count T.J. Wheeler. Yes. And but, hey, my man Tom Michael, he had a three in that game.
That's right.
So, there is I think that speaks to – you know, the weirdness of this kind of team, right? The idea that Kaufman salvages them and gets them in the tournament. But there was obviously a ceiling for a team like Kaufman. And, you know, he's going to, if Jimmer Fredette would have bad games where he'd cost his team games. Mm-hmm. You can imagine Andy Kaufman, who was that obviously not that quality of player, but that kind of player. Mm-hmm. When he had an off game, there was no chance. But it is pretty wild to think that Illinois played a second round tournament game, Deion Thomas, the end of his junior year, and he got six shots.
Yep.
That is that's not good.
Nope. Not good. So that offseason, the way I remember it is, okay, finally we have a recruiting class again. So you'd had the recruiting restrictions from Pearl and, you know, all of the sanctions and the three-year probation and banned from the tournament for a year and restricted, couldn't recruit off campus. But that spring they signed a class for the first time in a while, like an actual deeper class they could recruit, they could do this. You bring in Kiwan, the unique thing about 93-94 team is you have your top two scorers in team history playing 1 year together. I remember thinking Deion might leave for the NBA early after 93, but he didn't. He stuck around for his senior year. That's why he's the all-time leading scorer. But you brought in Kiwan. You brought in Jerry Hester from Peoria. You brought in Shelly Clark from JUCO. So you added, you know, that was the you're going to have Twin Towers kind of thing. You're going to have Deion. You're going to have somebody who can muscle around in the lane and everything else. You still have Bennett. You still had Michael. You still had Wheeler. You still had Keene. So that season I remember, I'm like, okay, we've added Hester, Garris, and Clark to what we had last year, this could be a pretty good team. So you're a freshman, you're on campus now. Tell me your anticipatory thoughts toward that team.
Yeah, I mean, it was Kiwan, right? Like Kiwan for me. I mean, it was Thomas's last year, but for me, like Kiwan was a freshman. I was a freshman. He was that kind of dynamic point guard that, I mean, obviously, like, you know, when's the last time they had a point guard like that? Like maybe Weisinger and really Bruce Douglas, if you really like, because I think that Garris was obviously better than Weisinger. And I think that, like, you know, to have that guy, and, you know, obviously too, like there's the Chicago connection, right? And that was the thing that we worried that we lost.
Yep.
Was that was not going to happen. That would become a bigger problem in a couple of years, which I'm sure we'll get into when they make the coaching change. But to me, Garris, to have those three guys, Hester, Garris, and to a lesser extent, Gandy, no offense to Jessica Simmons. Mm-hmm. They're 17 in the preseason poll, and that is directly because, like, they lost their top scorer, or their top scorer, but they lost their motor, I guess. But there's a sense that they are getting back more to being like a real team. If I may make a comparison that's probably not entirely apt, but I would say that this team is probably closer to the way that Hinson wanted to coach. I'm sure Hinson did not really want Kaufman just shooting like crazy all the time, but he kind of had to because he needed to score. Yep. This would be where you're somewhat shaky Kofi Coburn leaving, and now Underwood gets the team that he actually wants to coach analogy would come in. I think this team was closer to that because obviously Hester and Gandy, like Gandy's a big, but like he could run, and Hester was like a wing. You know, there was a sense that you get one more year of Dion. But then this was going to be closer to the old teams, right, where they ran and they scored, and Garris was going to be the engine for all of that.
Yep. And Garris, just to put it in terms of how people follow recruiting now, he was like, if there was a composite ranking or whatever, Garris was, let's say, around 25th, right on the low end of a five-star kind of recruit. I remember he was a Parade All-American. They'd named six the first team through a six team All-American. So that was kind of, if you want to know the top 30 at the time, it was the Parade All-Americans. So Garris was one of those. I believe he was Mr. Basketball in Illinois. Out of Westinghouse, you landed the top guy in Chicago. You've got him again. That maybe Jimmy Collins can keep doing his thing now that all probation is over. You can get the top guard and you can insert him in there with a senior Deion Thomas and the rest of this tournament, this six seed team coming back, and maybe you can get somewhere. It was probably a disappointing season given the hype. I mean, obviously you start the season 17th in the polls, but yes, you're right. There was a feeling that fall of like, okay, the 3-year cloud of Bruce Pearl is gone, and maybe we're really headed somewhere.
Yeah, and also, like, again, to do another historical analogy to next year's team, it was very obvious from the get-go that, like, hey, freshman guard, here's the keys.
Yes.
Like, Garris was clearly, like he was 100% the guy immediately. Like, Clemens was gone, and so, like, Garris was the guy that, if you look at the roster, there's really not there's really not, like, a logical other point guard really anywhere on the team, right? Like, and you saw it. Like, we'll get to the Missouri game, but, like, you know, like, he had to play – Garris just played. They relied on him.
Yes.
And in a way that they didn't have any point guards like Gene Cross, maybe. Mm-hmm. like I feel like Garris had to kind of be that guy. And I think what was exciting about early on is he certainly seemed up for it.
Yes.
He certainly seemed up for it. And they had the Marquette loss. But other than that, none of those games are tough, but like they're scoring, they scored over 100 points four times, over 99, five times. Mm-hmm. Like it's exciting. And you know, Shelly Clark is scoring a bunch of points.
Yep.
Keen is still, I think the idea that like Keen could play off the ball fully and just let Garris set him up was something that I think was exciting for a lot. Again, Keen didn't really make up for that so much, but I do think that was the idea. This was Thomas's last year, but when I think most of this year, and maybe this is because of that Missouri game, I think of Garris.
Yeah. I think so. I have this very specific memory that not many people have, and it's I mean, it's kind of morbid and sad as to why I have this memory. So anyway, my father passed away unexpectedly, Thanksgiving of 93. And so back then, you didn't really start the season until after the, if you played in a November tournament, you would start in late November, like around Thanksgiving. But if not, so the first game of the 93 season was December 1st. You know, now it's like November 5th. So after my father's funeral, I had come back to campus. I had crush seats. I debated even going to this game, but it was like, you know what? I need some level of normalcy. I'm back on campus. I need to. So I just went to the game. And I remember everything about the Sal game. I mean, anyone who's experienced grief, obviously, like, you have these moments of where you do your first normal thing and you forget about it for like 6 minutes. And then you remember, like, and you feel awful. Like, this is the only thing I've been thinking about the last week. And now this. So because of that, like, it's seared in my brain. I can picture so much of that LaSalle game, December 1st of 93. And the thing that I remember is Jerry Hester scored 20 points his first game as a freshman. So all this hype about Garrison, yes, he was good, but people left that game thinking, holy crap, if Hester is a scorer, like, he wasn't as heralded of a recruit, but people were thinking, wait a second, if Hester is something, like, that even changes this team even more. You know, you've got Dion, you've got this, but if you've got a guy on the wing who can score and he can shoot threes, well, now, you know, and if you can get Keen, get hot from three, now we're really on to something. So I remember those first two games. You know, after that, they moved to 16, they beat Illinois Chicago at home, and there was, and, you know, scored 101, and it was like, hold on a second, like, this could be an offensive team. They're averaging 100 points after the first two games. Hester is a scorer. You've got Garris, you've got Thomas. This could be like a real deal, like, three seed kind of, are the 80s back kind of basketball team. And so, you know, we roll through that, you know, those first two games. And then I remember the loss at Marquette. It was kind of a big deal to lose to, you know, the first road game, the offense is suddenly gone. Very, very similar to the Marquette game that we just experienced, where you look great to start off, and then you go to Marquette and you're playing in the Bucks Stadium, and it's like, what's happening? Why aren't we good? I thought we were so totally dominant. So very similar to what we saw last year. But then you blow out four more teams, and you're averaging, gosh, 100 something in those games, and you're like, it just feels like, okay, this is an offensive juggernaut. And then after all of that, we get to the game that is super beyond incredibly seared into my memory, which was the 1993 Bragging Rights game. I could probably do an entire podcast on the 1993 Bragging Rights game. It remains the most famous Bragging Rights games because it went to three overtimes, because it was at the old St. Louis Arena, which was the Checker Dome, which was... if people had ever been in the arena, it was the upper deck was so steep that there was a railing in front of each row of seats. So you would sit there and rest your elbows on a metal railing in front of you because they didn't want anybody to just fall forward and tumble down and off the balcony. And so it was this, it's just this memory. I had tickets to go with my dad. He had passed away at Thanksgiving. I decided to go with my mom, and we lose in three overtimes. I can name so, so many details about that game. But I guess I'll go to you first. Like, what do you remember about 93 Bragging Rights? So this is your freshman year.
Yeah, I obviously remember this game. I to be honest, I feel emotionally, I always felt emotionally connected to this game. I've always felt more emotionally connected to this game because of you, to be entirely honest. As someone that's been reading you for so long, I remember when you were there, when they finally got that first time you went.
Yes.
And they won. Was that the Devontae shot?
Game? Yes, that was the Revante Rice shot in
Revante, sorry.
14 season. Yeah. Yes, that was my first return. Yes, and I cried. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. Yep. It was amazing. The team wasn't very good, but yep, that was an amazing shot. And so you know, the thing I remember from that game, you know, that was my first Christmas back from college.
Yep.
I actually had come, so I was back, and, you know, like, I think a lot of people listening, the Rag and Rights game is obviously a big rivalry and a big part of everyone's lives, but it also, like, to me, to this day, it represents Christmas with my family.
Yes.
Like the idea of, because that's why I kind of hate when they do it when it's on like the 20th on like noon on a Saturday.
Yep.
Like, you know, it's supposed to be a gathering thing. It's how you know Christmas is almost here.
Yes.
And I always, that is obviously one of the most memorable ones, not just because of the three overtimes. But remember, Garris was both amazing in that game and also missed. Free throws, which of course, and which to me felt like that was, everybody has those sports moments. I still have them of moments where the universe seems unfair and wrong. Yep. Illinois fans, Illinois basketball fans have a lot of these.
Yep.
And that was the idea. That's what was supposed to happen.
Yes.
Garris was supposed to hit that free throw. Yep. He was gifted. He had this incredible game. He's this breakthrough freshman. And listen, we'll get into more Garris. Garris turned out to obviously be a really good player. Mm-hmm. But Garris, I think we thought he was going to be Kendall Gill. Yep. Like, I think we thought he was going to be like this super, or Bruce Douglas or Eddie Johnson or like whatever, like the next tier superstar sort of guy. And obviously he was always really good. But that was supposed to be the coronation game to beat Missouri, and for him to miss that free throw, and it was the third overtime, right? It was going into the third overtime.
I thought it was going into the from the first to the second overtime.
Okay, that might be right.
As I recall. So here's the memory I have before that. So it's a close game throughout, but Illinois went on a little run about 4 minutes ago and was up by 9 with a minute to go. And Missouri went 5 for 5 from three in the final minute to send it to overtime. So to start out, it's that game that we've all experienced where you're 96% certain you've won. You're up by 10 with a minute to go. It's over. They hit a three and you're like, okay, well, they'd have to hit like 5 more of these to have a chance. And then they hit another one, and then they hit another one, and then they hit another one. And suddenly they tie it and you're headed to overtime. So you start with that game. Then you have Kiwan. You might be right. It might be the end of the second overtime. I can't remember. It's the end of the first overtime or the end of the second overtime. But at the end of an overtime, he driving the lane, tie game, gets fouled at the buzzer, and they award him 2 shots. And they award him 2 shots without anyone in the lane. So just picture this. It's bragging rights.
Yeah.
It's 2 days before Christmas. Both teams clear out. So it's just like a technical free throw. There's 0-0 on the clock. He has to hit 1 of 2 free throws, and Illinois wins. I will never forgive Norm Stewart in my mind. Norm Stewart comes out and marches to half court, well beyond the coach's box, and is more or less joining the Missouri fans screaming, miss it, no, ah, miss it. You know, in the classless Missouri way that he did, and Kiwan, the true freshman, in a pressure spot, and any basketball player will tell you when everybody is gone from the lane and you're shooting that. I mean, Steph Curry just missed a technical free throw the other night in the, and he'll tell you, like, when the players aren't there in the lane, something's different about that free throw.
And also, Kiwan, when the coach is yelling behind your head.
Yes. Also, when the opposing coach is screaming at you and stomping his feet on the court. Also contributes to, he missed both free throws. The Missouri fans go nuts. But then in the second overtime, all of Missouri's players start falling out. And so, and this is the hardest thing, because the third overtime, Missouri wins 108-107 in the third overtime. And the third overtime was dominated by two players. I mean, the best way to describe it to Illinois fans is if next season in the third overtime, everyone fouls out and they put in Brandon Lieb, and Brandon Lieb wins the game. And you don't know, they put in Jason Sutherland and Derek Grimm. I can remember Derek Grimm was from Illinois. I can remember this, like, they hadn't played most of the season, and those two guys out of nowhere in the third overtime lead Missouri to and so I've told my story 1,000 times about the Missouri fans yelling at me and all this stuff. I don't need to go through that again. I'll just tell this story that the next day, what my father passed away from was a genetic heart ailment, and my sister and I needed to get tested to make sure we did not have it. And so my sister and I both went to the same cardiologist, a cardiologist I see to this day in St. Louis, and, you know, just testing for whatever that thing was that my father had. and the cardiologist the next day wants to talk about the basketball game, you know? And so it's like, you just can't escape. That's the thing about St. Louis at that time, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody the next day, you go anywhere, you go to a doctor's appointment, like, hey, did you watch Illinois, Missouri last night?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so hard. You just, there is no escaping bragging rights when you're in the St. Louis area.
Yeah. And particularly then, right? Like, yep. Particularly then when it was like, you know, it's funny, we'll get into this as we go a little closer, but like, you know, this was when like the Post Dispatch had, they covered Illinois games like they covered Missouri games.
Yeah.
Like I would like, this is the great story I always tell about this, that, well, I'll go ahead and say now, but like Derek Gould, of course, the great writer, Derek Gould, mm-hmm. Who's covered the Cardinals for the Post Dispatch for 20 years. He went to Mizzou. He graduated also 97, like I did. Mm-hmm. He was the stringer covering Mizzou games for the Post Dispatch. Wow. I was the stringer covering Illinois games for the Post Dispatch.
Wow.
And of course we didn't have email then to like contact each other or anything like that. So I remember seeing his byline. I'd be like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen with my career, but one thing I can guarantee you, I'm going to have more bylines for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch than that dude. It did not turn out that way. But yeah, he was they covered Illinois. I talked to Bernie Miklas about this. I do the Seeing Red podcast about the Cardinals with him, and I talked about this all the time. You know that like there's a weird. It's clear that the Post-Dispatch has just chosen Missouri.
Yep.
Like they have chosen Missouri for reasons that I don't think are entirely insane. Like I'm sure they've seen the numbers like everybody else. And and generally speaking, there are plenty of people covering the Illini.
Yep.
And there are fewer people covering Missouri. And so the Post-Dispatch can get more kind of market share out of it. And also they all went to Mizzou.
Yes.
You know, but I do, this was a time where that rivalry was like, it's still great.
Mm-hmm.
It's still great. And I'm still excited about it. And that was a time where it felt like our Oklahoma, Texas.
Yes.
Like, so. And specifically there, you know, we've talked this before, but like, you know, I'm one of those Illini fans that's a Cardinal fan like you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally that once you get south of Champaign or really south of, I guess, Rantoul,
mm-hmm.
That's why I hate the Cubs. I don't hate the Cubs because I hate Chicago. I actually like all the other Chicago sports teams, but I hate the Cubs because not only were they the Cardinals' rival, I shared the Illini with those people.
Yes.
The Illini became this unifying thing that me and Cubs fans could bond against against the Zoo fans.
Yes.
And so, so it was a huge, huge deal. Again, it's still a big deal, but it's not what it was. And like there used to be like a special section of the paper just to preview that game.
Yep.
And and we'll get into this as we go a little farther along, but we did when I was there for the Daily Illini, we had 5 press passes for the Daily Illini for that game because it was everybody understood, everyone's flooding the zone on the Illinois Missouri game.
Yep. Yeah, and it's crazy, like you mentioned the Post-Dispatch and Illini, like, you know. Oh God, do they have Vahe doing it? Like I think it was I can't remember who was the beat writer, and then Jeremy Rutherford did it for like the Blues beat writer.
Oh, no, yeah.
He did the Illini beat for a couple years. Like I remember I was like go back 20 years, 23, 25 years. The Post-Dispatch covered Illinois maybe closer than the Chicago paper. So I always quote this thing that remember the run in 99 in the Big Ten tournament. It was a bad season all around, but you beat Ohio State, you beat Minnesota or whoever. You reached the Big Ten tournament title game in 99. I remember like the Post-Dispatch. I got the paper delivered at the time. I was living in St. Louis. Post-Dispatch leads with like a big front of the sports page headline, Illini reach title tilt, in, you know, pretty big font kind of thing. And I looked up the Trib and the Sun-Times, and they both had it, like, buried in page 6 or page 7. Like, there is 0.0% chance that the Post-Dispatch would even cover Illinois reaching the title of a Big Ten title game. But at the time, they were fully, fully in on covering both Illinois and Missouri. And
this was also the height of – Chicago papers of Think It's Champagne's Cowtown.
Yes.
Right? Like this is when numbnuts like Mariotti is at the Sun-Times and Bayless is at the Tribune. And it was all like the idea of covering Illinois basketball, Illinois sports was, oh, come on, this is the big city. Who cares about it? And you still see a little bit of that.
Yep.
But I do think that you're exactly right. I remember Herb Gould was covering them for the Sun-Times. I don't remember who was covering them for the Tribune at the time. But like you got better coverage. Yeah, and you got better coverage from the Post-Dispatch, and not just because I was doing it.
Yes, yes.
They went big on it, you know, and that in a way that they don't anymore, which is fine. Yep. We have great people like you and Richie and Warner and the whole crew doing a great job covering the team, but we don't really need the Post-Dispatch to put their increasingly meager resources toward Illinois basketball, I guess.
That's right. Okay, well, probably we got to get through the 93 season because 93-94 was this, I don't know, it just was there. Like, it showed promise and then it wouldn't. And then you'd beat Iowa and now we've beat Iowa at home 3 years in a row, but then you lose to Michigan. And it was just kind of one of those back and forth seasons that ended in the, you know, just for fans who weren't around at the time or younger. It ended in an 8-9 game against Georgetown. So just think of those 8-9 seasons where, okay, we're safe, we're above the bubble. No, we're kind of, we probably better beat Minnesota if we really want to be safe in the tournament and everything else. So it just kind of went back and forth and never got there. You're thinking, okay, Hester and Garris are going to be this thing, and then they'd have off games, and then Shelly Clark dominates this game, and you're like, oh, man, we got two big men, but then the next game you lose at Northwestern, and it was just this – I just remember that season as being, yep, we're good. Nope. And then, that's the kind of 8-9 season that people have. You're an 8-seed, a 9-seed. You're staring down the 1-seed in the second round. It was just that kind of year. That's how I remember it.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, because now you look back at it and you're like, man, why were we not losing our minds over Deion's last year?
Yes.
Like, that's like the all-time scorer. But, like, really, again, I wasn't covering the team yet, but I was a freshman at the DI, and, like, there was a sense of, like, I think it was because Deion was obviously great, obviously, but he never had, like, he made it to two tournaments games up to this point, but like never had like his Kauffman hits a shot against Iowa moment.
Yes.
Or never had, like he never really had that moment. He was just consistently good all the time. And it's funny, you look once again, you look at the NCAA tournament game, Deion Thomas gets 8 shots from the field. He goes 7 of 8, but he gets 8 shots from the field. 2 more than Tom Michael.
Yep. I remember that one being, as I recall, it was like, whether it was either Thursday or Friday, it was like the last game. I remember that one being like a 9 p.m. kind of game that lost to Georgetown in the tournament. And again, I forget what 1-seed we were staring down, but everybody was, it's when you get that, it's that whole like, okay, well, I mean, it'd be neat to beat Georgetown, but there's no chance we're winning in the next game. Right. So
it was Arkansas. It was the Corliss Wilkins.
Oh yes. Yes.
Scotty Thurman, Arkansas team.
Yes. Yeah. So yes. Playing Arkansas in Oklahoma City, probably an arena that's 95% Hogs fans. What's Fayetteville, Oklahoma City is what, 2 hours maybe. So, yes. So it was a disappointing year. The thing, here's my 93-94 season where it lives in my memory. I'm not at home right now, but if I was, I'd be sitting at my desk where I was a ticket stub saver. And so I've saved ticket stubs from everything from Cardinals games to Rams games to Illini football, Illini basketball. For that season, I saved every ticket stub and wrote the score on the ticket and then like pinned it to the wall of my room. Like it was just that kind of thing. I was living in a house on Chalmers, and so I just had this collection on the wall of every game and what the what the ticket said, or what happened in the score of that game, and so because of that I know a lot of the scores from this season. I remember that year as no close games. Like you had the Missouri game, but I'm just going to read you like the last 10 games. Beat Penn State by 18, beat Michigan State by 12, lost to Northwestern by 11, beat Ohio State by 12, lost to Iowa by 14, lost at Michigan by 9. Okay, a close game. Won at home versus Wisconsin by 11, then lost at Indiana by 15, then beat Penn State at home by 25, won at Minnesota by 15, and then lost at Purdue by 10. There were no game, like there was nothing. There was no suspense. You were either winning or losing games that season. It was the weirdest. Like, I still have that memory of, like, you know, is there going to be a game that's even within 5 points in the final 2 minutes or anything else? Like, the entire Big Ten season, I think only the game at Michigan at home was close, and everything else was 9 or more points. It was just so, such a weird season to live through of you're either winning or you're losing, and there's no in between. You're either good or you're bad, and that's it.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things, if you remember, this was also the year that Wisconsin ended their tournament drought with Michael Finley, mm-hmm. who was supposed to play for Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Proviso East. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that that's another aspect. There was a listlessness
yes.
to this team that I think is telling. Mm-hmm. And I think might, when we get in the next season, bled over
yes.
into that season. And I would argue, you know, that everybody hits that moment here in Georgia, that moment where when Mark Richt, the last game that Alabama was not favored until the national championship game this year was in 2015. And Mark Richt lost like 35-7 in a pouring rainstorm. And everyone at once been like, oh, this is not going to turn over, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have to do something. And mm-hmm. obviously it's Henson. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure Lauren could tell you more details of mm-hmm. of his exit. But the idea that it was to be purely like Lou just like wanted to go out on top. Like, I think there was a sense of growing frustration that like they were not going to get back yes. to where they were before Thomas, and they weren't going to be terrible, but they were not going to get back, at least under Henson, in a way that was, I think, becoming increasingly clear both this year and the next year.
Yep. Yep. Totally agree. And that's what it felt like going into 94-95. So, you know, whereas there was all this expectation, now you had Deion leave and graduate. You know, now it's Kiwan's team. You're hoping Shelly Clark can be that player in the middle. You're hoping for a lot of things, but you're just not exactly sure what to expect from that 94-95 team. Now, you did bring in, that's when you brought in the seeds of the eventual 98 Big Ten title game. That Ooh. Recruiting class was Kevin Turner, Jerry G, Matt Heldman, you know, that, I guess Brian Johnson was there, but he was a walk-on, eventually moved to scholarship. So the seeds of what would eventually win the Big Ten in 98 are started there, but it is this transition year. Keene's a junior, Kiwan's a sophomore, Robert Bennett was maybe your only senior? Let me see here. Robert Bennett and Steve Roth were the only seniors, and Roth had started as a walk-on, maybe was on scholarship by that point. So this was, you know, Hester and Garris are sophomores. You've lost Deion, you've lost the rest of those seniors, so you're kind of looking to Keene and all of them to maybe assemble something. So is this the first year you covered the team for the DI?
Yes. Okay. This was also the first year that they played at the United Center. They played the United Center this year
yes.
against Duke. Uh-huh. They were preseason. They were preseason 25. Mm-hmm. they did not give us as many press passes. Mm-hmm. So to sneak me in, they gave me a camera with no film on it. So I would not waste the film, but I could sit on the floor and take notes and write about it afterwards. So that was how hard it was to get a credential for that game. That was the Cherokee Park, Trajan Langdon, Steve Wojciechowski,
yep.
Chris Collins team,
yep.
and Jeff Keeple.
And as I remember, a little breakout moment for Jerry G, because he,
yep.
you know, he was a pretty good recruit. He was Mr. Basketball in Illinois, and he had an offer from Duke, and you know that was, you know, it was his fourth game or whatever. He started with the San Juan Shootout in Puerto Rico. Where you won all three games, but yeah, that was kind of his little coming out party. I remember I went up there with my roommates, first time in the United Center, and I sat up in the far reaches, and I think it was sold out. I mean, it was like 22,000 people there or whatever. So it was the furthest I had ever sat watching a basketball game. But yeah, I remember Jerry G is like, oh, hey, man, this guy has this little mid-range game, this little big man, but not really that big, but can muscle his way around. So yeah, you started to see the signs of what you could be. But yeah, again, another up and down season, and yet another loss to Missouri in the Bragging Rights game. That game really haunts me. I mean, after the 93 thing, this was a blowout, like wasn't even close.
Yeah. And there were, this team had some bad vibes. Mm-hmm. Is probably the best way to put it. There were some good dudes on this team. This is when I actually was forced to become friends with Matt Heldman. Mm-hmm. On this team, because we were both in Econ 104 together. Mm-hmm. And unlike Daily Illini reporters, basketball players were required to go to class.
Yes.
So he would always give me his notes, which I always appreciate. A really, really great dude. And you know, the thing I remember most from this year, three things really. One, this was a team that I think thought it was better than it was.
Yep.
And I think they started in the top 25, and there was this kind of vibe that, like, here we go, here it comes. They won that first tournament in Puerto Rico.
Yep.
There was a sense that, like, they were, and they played Duke tough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was a sense that they were really coming. They won their next five, and then they lose Missouri, and then you start to realize maybe this team is not great. And then the second thing I remember from this team was my fault, actually. Mm-hmm. which was Shelly Clark. For those of you that remember this team, Shelly Clark was arrested this year for a home invasion. Mm-hmm. An ex-girlfriend of his. That story was totally accidentally broken by me. Mm-hmm. Because the Daily Illini, every day at 5 o'clock, you went to the courthouse at police station and just looked at all, like, you get all the public arrest reports, and mm-hmm. you looked for any news and looked for anything happening. And every once in a while was a good way to a great way to sell papers around that time was to list all the people who had been busted for picking up prostitutes in one of the parks. Yep. And yes. The Daily Illini always did stuff like that. Yep. Which we should, in the News Gazette wouldn't do it, but we would do it because, you know, it was public information. Anyway, so I was there, and I was just doing the regular reports. And I just noticed that, like, wow, Shelly Clark, like, is this that Shelly Clark? And he's like 6'9".
Right,
and,
right.
And he had gotten arrested for a home invasion. And so I ran the story. And, you know, the sports information director at the time was Kent Brown. Mm-hmm. Kent Brown was actually the sports information director at the time. He left to go to Kansas State. And then came back to Illinois. I think Kent is a very good dude. I got nothing but good things to say about Kent, but he was definitely not happy with me about that story, because, you know, I think that, you know, then as now, the idea, like, as a reporter, I would, like, shoot, man, the everyone's phone numbers were, like, every student's phone number was literally listed in the yes. campus yes. dorm handbook.
Yes.
So I just freaking called Shelly Clark and called people, as a reporter is supposed to do. But that's frowned upon generally by sports information departments. But we broke that story, and it got very, because I was covering that team, and it was not a good situation. Like, you know, Clark was suspended. He did come back. But it was kind of an ugly situation, and I think cast a little bit of a pall on everything, which leads to the third thing I remember from this team, which is that tournament game.
Yeah.
And we will get the tournament game. Do you have anything else you want to hit from games this year before we go to the tournament
game? Not really, because it was this. It was the best way to describe it is that year when you get ranked and you lose. So, you know, you started out pretty good. You won the San Juan. You played Duke tough. You finally get ranked before the Missouri game. Then you lose to Missouri and Connecticut back-to-back. You fall out of the polls. But then you beat Memphis, who was decent that year. And you start 4-0 in the Big Ten. Now you're ranked again. Boom. Okay, this is a team. They put it together. Here we go. Lose the next two. Fall out of the rankings. So it was just that kind of thing. Then you beat Iowa, Penn State. You win at Iowa. Then you lose 4 or 5, and there's no chance to be ranked. So it was just that bounce kind of season of, like, yep, nope, not gonna, yeah, okay, nope, not going to do it. It was just yo-yoed the whole time.
And so for me, what was super exciting was I had only, at that point in my life, been to one tournament game ever. I went with my dad to see them in the Final Four year to play Ball State. Mm-hmm. In Indianapolis, in mm-hmm. the second round game, where with Rick Majerus, I believe you guys talked about, was the coach of that team.
Yep.
And so that was the only tournament game I've ever been to. So I was so excited. Like, they I think they were a pick 'em. I think, according to Baseball and Basketball Reference, they were a pick 'em at the end of the Tulsa game. Mm-hmm. But there was certainly a sense that if Illinois was going to get a lower seed, this is the type of seed you wanted to get, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Tulsa did not have any future NBA players. They had Tubby Smith. Tubby yep. Smith was their coach. Mm-hmm. He would leave after this to go to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And then the guy replaced him would last 2 years and get fired and get replaced by himself. And then that will be in later podcasts, as we will get into.
Yes.
I remember from this game three things. One, being very bewildered that the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes mascot was a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
I've still always been very bewildered by this.
Yes.
Two was Illinois being up at halftime.
Yes.
Being up at halftime. And of course, as we may remember, they were all set up because Old Dominion, of course, had just had just pulled off an upset of Villanova.
Yep.
And so it felt like a free ride
into the Sweet 16. All the way to the Sweet 16, exactly.
Yep. All the way. And so, and we drove from, we did not fly. The airline did not have a chartered plane budget. Mm-hmm. So we literally got in like the little Toyota Camry, or maybe the Ford Escort, Daily Line, and drove all the way to Albany. And we're so excited because once we're like, wow, we're gonna be here all weekend. We're gonna have like I'd never been to the state of New York before. It was like super exciting. It was gonna be great. They won. They were up at halftime, and then they blew it in the second half. Yeah. And I remember interviewing them in the locker room afterward, and Clark, who again was always glowering at me, which I understand,
right,
he said that yeah, we really thought we had these guys.
Yep.
At halftime. And I'm just like, dude, like you guys are an 11 seed.
Yep.
Like, and I felt like it was indicative of just the general bad vibes that this team had. This team had more talent, better talent than their record in their first round exit ultimately showed, I think. And so we eventually, they lost. I think they played at 7, maybe 9. I mean, I think it was 9. It had to have been 9. And we got back in the car and just drove back. Because you can do that when you're 19.
That's right.
That's so, right. That's what I remember from that.
Yeah, I remember Keewon was really good. And I remember Shea Seals was that's the name, yeah, I always remember from that Tulsa team. Like, he's the one who took over in the second half. Illinois led by 7 at halftime and then kind of blew it in the second half. And again, this is another run of, I mean, we'll get to it in 97. Like, the team you think you're about to face is beat, and it's like, whoa, a path just opened here. And it just ended poorly. I remember, so that was, I believe it was spring break, because I was in Salt Lake City. No, I was in Park City, Utah on a ski trip for spring break. Went to some bar in Park City and watched that game. I remember the Purdue game was happening around the same time. What seed? Now I got to see what seed Purdue was that year, because Purdue had a pretty good, yeah, they were one seed. And so let me see what had happened. So Purdue was playing UCF in that first round, it looks like. No, wait, that's 94. I'm looking at the wrong year. Let me go forward 1 year. So 95 tournament, Purdue is a 3 seed. And who is Purdue playing? They are playing UW Green Bay. They won 49-48. And so I remember these Purdue fans were so yappy and so – and I remember, you know, it was – so I'm, you know, spring break. So what am I, 21 at this time? It's my junior year. And I just remember, like, it was my first experience of a whole bunch of fans at a bar watching tournament games. Like, it was that first time where I was in public somewhere else. I wasn't in an Illini bar. It was just a whole bunch of TVs, my first sports bar experience. So I will always have this memory of those Purdue fans who were yapping before the game. Then they win 49-48. The guy tries to rescue it by screaming, "It's just the first of 6 in a row," and marches out, and everybody's jeering at him and this and that. And Purdue did choke, surprise surprise, in the next round, losing to Memphis. So yes, that's my memory of then we watched Illinois Tulsa and lost, and that was that. And honestly, like, of any seasons in the 90s, the two that bleed together for me are this one, 94-95, and 95-96. They just, as you said earlier, it just felt like the end of Henson. Like, when he retired after in the spring of 96, it just felt like, okay, this is, we're reaching the end here. And I'm guessing, covering the team, you had the same emotion.
You had the vibe. Like, there was just a bad vibe of that team, man. Like, there really was just like, you know, and it wasn't like anyone was bad people or anything, but it was just, you had a sense. I mean, Henson was getting older. I think there were perhaps reaches that Henson might not have done in the past,
yes,
personality wise.
Yes.
They were eager to get back to where they were, and so by cut corners, I don't mean cheat. They just may have gone after guys they might have held off on in the past. And it just led to a bad vibe. And there were good dudes. I think Keewon was an awesome guy. And obviously Hester was great and Gandy was great. And like, there were nice guys on that team, but there was definitely just,
there was a there's you always know those teams that always just has a sense that they're it's been a long year and they're kind of okay if the season ends now.
Yep.
And Illinois kind of had that year.
Yep. Yep. And so the my main memory of 95-96, so this would be my fifth year. So I went 5 years in Illinois, so it's my second senior year. My main memory of that season is how, okay, so obviously the Duke win in December was big. Duke at the time had the, you know, 121 game home winning streak or whatever over non-conference teams. And so Illinois went at Duke sometime in early December and won. It was this huge, huge, huge deal. Kiwan had a great game, and that vaulted Illinois from out of nowhere into the rankings. But then you beat Kansas State, you won the Illini Classic, and then I remember that Bragging Rights game ended the 4-game losing streak. I guess I should talk about like who had arrived. So this was that. This was the Ryan Blackwell was the one big recruit, and he was a pretty big name at the time. He ended up transferring to Syracuse. Right? Yes.
Yeah.
He went back home. He was from upstate New York, came to Illinois. So you're adding him, and you had, you know, so you have that Heldman class who's becoming sophomores. I believe Notree joined the team that year. I think he was Prop 48, right?
He was, yeah.
So he had been there as a freshman the year before, but he couldn't play. So this is his first year, just like Nick Anderson, just like Frank Williams. If you didn't have the academics, you had to sit out as a freshman at that time. That was Prop 48. So you added Notree and his hops, and you got all these freshmen to their sophomore year, and all of this else is going on, and you had Hester as a junior and Kiwan as a junior and everything else. So you beat Duke, you rocket up the reins, then you beat Missouri in overtime. Jerry Hester, maybe his best game of all time. Well, except for maybe the game at Indiana, the Bob Knight, Teddy Valentine game, which we won't get to as part of this, but I'll get to with my next guest. But yeah, Hester goes off in overtime. I remember that game so well. Illinois wins in overtime, finally breaks the 4-game losing streak. Missouri was ranked. Illinois was ranked. Felt really good. You then went to that Christmas tournament in Hawaii called the Rainbow Classic. You beat Hawaii and NC State, but you lost to Syracuse. Did the DI send you out for that or no?
No. Yes. No, they did not.
Yes. But then this is the thing I remember. You start the Big Ten 0-5. So you had climbed all the way to number 12 in the rankings, and you're thinking something, and it's just start the Big Ten 0-5, and it's like a gut punch. And that is when I remember the first Henson calls of 0-5 the Big Ten. He's getting up there in age. Didn't happen last year. Looks like it's not going to happen this year. Hasn't happened really for 5 years. One NCAA tournament win since 1989. Is it time? So what do you remember at those times?
Yeah, that 5-game losing streak was bad. And it was because, you know, some of those, I mean, losing at home to Michigan State, losing at Minnesota, like getting wiped out at home by Indiana. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good. This is also, if anyone's read my book, God Save the Fan, this is where, this was the stretch where my famous Robert Traylor story happened. For anyone that's read that book, I will not tell the story now because it is a family podcast, but can look it up if you read it. That was a stretch where you really felt like this, like they had maybe had to do something. It was a turnaround because it's not like there were incredible recruits. Like obviously it was early, but so you didn't know, it was a different time. Yep. But the idea that like they had turned some sort of major corner was not supported by the evidence. It felt like this was who they were.
Yep. It was so many starts and stops. Like after that Duke game, it was like, okay, now we got all the way up to 12 in the rankings after beating Missouri, and like, okay, it is happening. That's when we were doing the United Center game. We beat Cal in the United Center. Mm-hmm. I want to say that was that. I wasn't Jason Kidd yet, was it?
No. I feel like it was Jason Kidd.
Was it?
It was not Jason Kidd. We must have just. It was Sharif Abdur-Rahim.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Whose son plays for Georgia now? In case you want to feel old.
There, yeah, I do every day. and so yes, so you climb all the way to 12, and then you lose. You start 0-5 in the Big Ten. You fall all the way out of the polls. It was just, man. It was just falling apart, and you just kept having the same season. That's why I say 95-96 felt the same. Like it just wasn't getting there. And you know, obviously those conversations were happening, you know, in the basketball offices as to, is it time and everything else. So did you have any inkling? So this is the year I'm working at the News Gazette this year. So I'm a score taker, and then I move up to agate shooter. And so I am, you know, there on Friday nights taking high school football scores and things like that. But I'm at least around, and I hear little scuttlebutt here and there and everywhere. Did you, you know, with, I guess you were a columnist for DI at the time, right?
Yes.
Yes. So you were doing columns and such. So was there inkling that this was going to happen with Henson, or what do you remember as we approached March?
Yeah, it's funny. I just looked up to find the Chicago Tribune story from February of that year. It's literally all about, there's widespread speculation that mm-hmm. they're going to make a move. And athletic director Rod Gunther is tight-lipped on the topic, and even more so about potential replacements. But yep. when you're having that conversation in mid-February, it's not great.
Yeah,
it's not great. And yep. and he's, what, 64, 65? Like, he's not, like... Like, not dramatically old. So, like, we see people coach all the time. I think everybody understood that it was sort of time and to kind of modernize a little bit. And so, particularly when it became clear that they weren't going to make the tournament.
Yep.
And I think that's what that was the thing. It's one thing to not get back to where you were in 89. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to go so far backward that you're not making the tournament mm-hmm. and you're headed to the NIT. And I think that was the moment. They did make the NIT last year. That year, and I think that speaks to, like, I think everybody knew, and I think everybody knew that was going to be the last game. Mm-hmm. I think everybody knew that was going to be the last game, and it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember the day that it was announced Henson was retiring. I want to say it was the day of the Iowa game, because they did beat Iowa. I want to say, here's my memory. I've told this story on the podcast before. I had gone home for something Friday night, so it's my senior year. And I left my car there and drove my mom's minivan back to school. I can't remember why, but I was driving up to school and my mom had gotten a car phone installed. So, like, not a cell phone. We're talking car phone with a little antenna that screwed through the window in the back and had the little, like, whippy antenna and then the little bag and the box there in the middle. So I remember calling my girlfriend at the time just to be like, yes, I'm calling from the car. If you need me, you can reach me at this number. I mean, it's a big deal. But the way I remember it is, I was on maybe driving back for the Iowa game and they announced it or something like that. I can't, that's how I remember it.
Yeah. I'm reading the Tribune right now. He announced it to the players after the Iowa. After the Iowa win, Brian Notre and the players said they were super, super surprised. Henson jokingly said the players were probably pleased. Hmm. That was funny. Huh. I'm sure he was kidding. I'm sure they weren't.
Yep.
But I do think that it's also worth noting, and this will be a subplot heading into the next season. Here's how that story ends. The players had a clear reaction to one other element of Saturday's events, namely Henson's replacement. They're clearly behind Jimmy Collins, who recruited most of the Illini players and has remained close to them ever since. He's been like a father, Notre said. I feel like he deserves to get the head coaching job, said Collins. I wish those players had a voice. Naturally, they want the staff to stay because this is the staff they know. And that is that definitely leads us very well into the next season.
Yes, that defines what's going to happen that spring. So I remember that the end of that season, Henson did not get the send-off he deserved. It ended with an overtime loss at home to Minnesota and then the horrible home loss to Roy Rogers and Alabama in the NIT. So you have this legendary coach who's retiring and senior day they lose a awful game to Minnesota at home in overtime. And then they get a home NIT game and lose to someone named Roy Rogers. And so it was just ugly. So again, I'm at the News Gazette. My story at the time is that I was working one night. By this time, I'm doing the what's called agate shooting. So this is an old school and newspaper term. Basically, it was the scoreboard page, and I would go in late at night once the final NBA game was over, and I would print out the NBA standings, and I'd gather the local bowling scores, and I would get all of the, if there was a 5K, I would put all of those numbers into the paper, And it would all go on the scoreboard page. And since the News Gazette was a morning paper, you know, was a early afternoon paper, right, I could just have it all ready. And then they're printing in the morning and getting out. There's no deadline. There's no nothing else. So I remember being in there and I went to ask Bob Osmussen a question. And he had the Florida media guide open on his desk. And he gathered a bunch of papers over the top of it so that I could not see and possibly tell someone on burgeoning Illinois message boards that were happening online that, hey, one of the writers of the News Gazette is looking at a Florida media guide for some reason. But I also had the assignment to go in and take a poll for the newspaper of who do you want to be the next Illinois coach. And people would call this answering machine, leave their message. So my job was to go to the answering machine and compile. And it was 83% Jimmy Collins, 85% Jimmy Collins. Like, that's all the fan base wanted. Henson is done. It's time for Jimmy Collins. So that's my memory. That's how I remember it going. And then Kruger was announced.
Yeah. And I think, again, in the story about Henson announcing that he was retiring, the second half of the story was Jimmy Collins saying, I want the job, and the players want me to have the job. Like, yes, that is legitimate pressure, to say the very least. So to hire Kruger was obviously a risk, right? And and because this is before Billy Donovan, this is before they win the championships. Florida is not considered like this top shelf basketball school. And my story about this is I was the sports editor of the Daily Illini when this happened, and I wasn't covering the team, I was a sports editor. And so Kruger was a really smart guy, and he knew to reach out to the students. He wanted to make sure that he knew that Henson had seen as kind of like this older kind of guy, lost touch a little bit, and he wanted to kind of be. So he gave his first interview to the Daily Illini and to me, because I was a sports editor. And I think I've told this before on a podcast, my first question for him was, so what do you think of the Chief? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah.
And he said, what are you talking about?
Yes. He did not have a PR team prep him for.
No, he did not. Yes. I was like, the Chief, you know, that it's kind of a controversy around here. He's like, really? What about? And I was like, well, I have my lead now. I think my lead was still going to stay. Well, Lon Kruger has a lot to learn about coming to Champaign, but he certainly was a professional. He certainly had his act together pretty quickly. And it's funny when you look at this team. It's telling that, you know, the guy I remember really being good for this team, ironically enough, like obviously Garris was good, but like this was like a real, like Brian Johnson was really good on this team. And I think that spoke a little bit. Like, he obviously wasn't the stars, but like he was I remember he had a 4.0, he's an engineering major. Like Lucas came along later, and Lucas was no dummy, but like Lucas was like more of like a more traditional, like he was recruited, they brought him in.
Yep.
Johnson was a walk-on, and he instantly became like Kruger's favorite dude.
Yep.
And he was that guy that was always there. I found myself when I was reading your piece on the Illini board the Team USA guy that just, I'm very tired.
Ty Rogers. Yes.
Ty Rogers. Thank you.
Yes.
Obviously Ty Rogers is a lot more athletic than Brian Johnson, but that was who Brian Johnson was on that team. Yes. And it was a big deal. And like that team was really kind of built around Heldman, like obviously Garris, but Heldman was huge for that team. Heldman had more, he had 10 points, 3 assists, 3 boards, 2 assists. Like, he was a big part of that team. Turner got hot with game of shooter that year. Like, that was a team that, unlike the last 2 or 3 years, they were better than their talent.
Yes.
And I think that's what people were waiting for.
Yes. And it was so weird because Brian Johnson was just a walk-on, and then all of a sudden he's like starting. You know, you start that season, Kruger put him on scholarship and put him in the starting lineup. Like, what? Wait. Now, there was the Jerry Hester injury, so you were missing a wing.
Right.
Hester.
And it was relatively late in the year, too, because he'd actually, I mean, like, he got an extra year out of it, but, like, it was early. Like he played the beginning of the year.
Yes. 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 He took a medical red shirt, which allowed him to be there for the Big Ten title team in 97. So that's really what this is the last year we'll talk about. That's what this 96-97 team was about. It was kind of like the setup for the next year when you're going to win the Big Ten. But it was pretty good. It got ranked. That was a decent team. You know, it's Kiwan as a senior, and so he's like the go-to everything. But, you know, you started to see something from Kevin Turner. You started to get a lot more from Jared G, who had changed his name from Jerry to Jared, I believe, that season. I believe it was after his 2 years as Jerry G and then 2 years as Jared G. Didn't have much. I mean, it was kind of a transition recruiting class. So I want to say Victor Chukwudebe is the only recruit I think maybe added in the spring after Kruger got the job or something like that. So it wasn't any kind of bringing in a bunch of recruits kind of thing, but you did have a new staff and he changed things up and he changed the way he was going about assembling the offense. And Kevin Turner is suddenly this huge part of the offense, and Helbin's running the show and Kiwan is the star. And it just kind of all started to fit a little bit and became a tournament team, even got ranked as high as 15th at the end of the year. So, again, are you sports editor again during this season?
No, I was a managing editor, so I was not covering the team. But when you're managing at the DI your senior year, you just kind of go to the games when you want to. And it's senioritis. We all had senioritis.
Right.
So I did not go to the tournament this year. I feel like I should give it to the people that were covering the team. But I still wrote about it. I was a columnist. I wrote about this team pretty regularly. And it really felt, you know, it reminds me a little bit of it reminds me of kind of what Osselberger did for Iowa State this year. Just kind of take those dudes and just mix them up and make it work.
Yes.
And lay the foundation.
Yes.
And it was, in a way, it was kind of a sign that Hinson maybe had not entirely lost his ability to find talent, but he was not getting the most out of those guys.
Yes.
And to have those fresh eyes like Kruger was a big deal. Mm-hmm. It was a big deal. And they turned it around.
Mm-hmm. Non-conference, the only two losses were one was at Cal in double overtime and one was to Louisville in Hawaii. But you win the rest of the games and you beat a ranked UCLA team and you beat Missouri in the bragging rights. And so you go into the Big Ten season and suddenly you find yourself 24 in the poll. And we weren't expecting with Kruger's first year to be ranked. And suddenly you're using Brian Johnson and all these other parts. And even though Jerry Hester's injured, you find yourself ranked. Kind of bounced around there. Looks like, you know, lost at number 16 Michigan. That's not a big deal. Beat number 7 Minnesota. Is this the Minnesota team that would go to the Final Four? The vacated team? I think it is.
Yes. Yeah, they lost to Kentucky in the national championship. Yeah. The Final Four.
Yeah. But again, bounced around. But you, again, continue this run of beating Iowa at home when they're ranked. You won at a ranked Indiana team. You found yourself back in the polls. You did lose at Minnesota when they had climbed all the way to number 2, that Clem Haskins team. And then you finished 11-7 in the Big Ten. You're number 15 in the final poll just before the NCAA tournament. Then you dropped to 19 after you lose to Purdue in the Big Ten finale. So it wasn't supposed to be. You're thinking, okay, new coach, let's see what it is. It was a pleasantly surprising season. He let Kiwan be Kiwan and score a lot, and he found other pieces and a different way to use Kevin Turner and a new way to use not Jerry but Jared G and put something together.
Yeah, let's not forget how the season started, by the way. Their first game was at the UIC Pavilion against Jimmy Collins.
Against some coach named Jimmy Collins.
Jimmy Collins.
Who was passed over.
Yes, and he was clearly angry about it. And I would argue he was both justifiably angry about it, but also the correct hire was made.
Yes.
I said out of absolute love for Jimmy Collins, but he made the tournament 3 times during his run there. It was really good the next year, and you did see why there was reason to be excited. I think Notre eventually went to play there, if memory serves correctly. I think clearly. I mean, I'll put it this way. Jimmy Collins' next job after this was not in the NBA.
Yes.
So like Kruger's was. So yep. I think it was the right call. But that was what an impossible situation to go into, to have to play to a very dialed up UIC team that's desperate. Collins is desperate to beat you. Yep. And they won that game by 5. It was a close game and it was tight. And they hung on to win. But that is just a nightmare way to start out if you're Kruger. And it would be a little bit like if Gross's first game was at a really awesome
Kansas State team for Weber something. Yeah, just a really, really bad situation.
Yep.
It spoke to how well he had to kind of have that team going from the beginning.
Yeah. The other thing I remember about that year is like the crowds weren't bought in yet. Like I just saw the Chicago State game at home had 8,700 people in Assembly Hall. You know, this is coming off the 80s where everything was sold out, you know, and it's just before you're going to go like 6 years of sellouts in the 2000s. You know, that's when like it was after the failures of 94, 95, 96, the fan base was like, is that whole thing ever going to return? I'm not sure. And so that was that. But then very surprising season, very surprising results. You get all the way into the tournament. You're number 19 in the polls. I remember that game against USC. Keywan was great. They played really well offensively. Wasn't a defensive game, 190-77. Setting up, and then, was it Georgia, right? Like, across from Illinois was Georgia, and they had lost. They were the 3 seed, I want to say. I'm going to pull up the bracket now.
Yeah, yeah. Chattanooga was 14 and Georgia was 3.
So you win the 6-11 game. Illinois is the 6 seed. They beat the 11 seed USC, setting up what you think is going to be a 3-6 game against number 3 Georgia and Tubby Smith. And Tubby lost to Chattanooga. So now, again, like we just talked about, everybody's thinking, here we are, Sweet 16.
Yeah.
We are playing Chattanooga. And I believe this was the... This was the locker room cheering gear, I believe.
I think so, yes.
Had heard Illinois celebrating. The Chattanooga players had heard them celebrating and thinking, okay, we just wrapped up the Sweet 16 because all we have to do is play Chattanooga. And then that game, that was a rough game. You didn't go to either one of these?
No, but remember, they were up by halftime of this game, too.
Yep.
They were up 34-33. They were 10 and a half point favorites in this game.
Yep.
And that's a bummer.
Yep.
But again, it's hard to get too angry about it because
they
probably shouldn't have been there.
Yep.
To be at that point was pretty remarkable. And everything fell away. Like, listen, what's the thing we always talk about? Illinois winning as a lower seed does not happen very often in the NCAA tournament. Here's another I think that obviously there's a higher seed here, but like there's a history of underperformance that we obviously know it's been a part of this really for since I was in college and really before.
Yeah. And I do remember at the end of that 97 season, like even though you lost that Chattanooga game, you had these 5 seniors coming back. You thought you could be pretty good in 98, and you had just seen a coach take the mess of 96 and turn it into a 6 seed, even after losing some players. So that was like, I remember, so, you know, we're kind of reaching the end of the whole, you know, the 5 years we're covering here. I remember in 97, even though that loss to Chattanooga sucked, and I think it was a Sunday afternoon, and I was watching with a bunch of friends and ready to celebrate a Sweet 16 for the first time in forever, and we didn't get there. But even with that, there was this encouragement of, you know what, like this is, you know, this Kruger guy might be able to coach a little bit, and we were, you know, there was excitement. So this is, I guess, that's your senior year too. So you're graduating. Yeah. What were your thoughts at the time about Illinois basketball?
It was exciting. It felt like they had, like, Kruger was, it felt like they were, listen, they weren't what they were in 89, but they felt rejuvenated, and they felt like they were laying the foundation, and Kruger was like clearly a star. The unibrow was always a little confusing, but otherwise he was a star. Like, and I think that they were, and you know, I think it leads, because he leaves pretty soon after that, after they win the big, he goes to Atlanta. And it's funny to think that Kruger, the transition from Kruger, and you'll talk about this in the next episode, I'm sure, but him leaving early and then self leaving early, I would argue, is what really lays the groundwork for Weber being hired. Because what they really wanted was someone that wasn't going to leave.
Yes.
That someone that wanted to be here. And to have lost Kruger and then self, two stars of coaching, Weber desperately wanted to be here. He saw it as a job he would have for the rest of his life. And that was really, really appealing to people after Kruger and self left.
Yep. So with when we're doing wrap-ups with, I've done with some of the other guys, just name an underrated player. So when you think of these 5 seasons, I mean, obviously, like, Deion and Keywan were the stars. They're still number 1, number 2 in all-time scoring. Like, we're in an era where you didn't have a deep team. You had a star team, and you had like the one guy that you'd give the ball to, kind of thing. But if you think of an underrated player through these 5 years from 93 to 97, who comes to mind?
I think it's probably Hester.
Yeah.
I feel like Hester went at, like, he was, I think because he kind of had this start and stop career, he gets a little forgotten a little bit, but he was a terrific player. And I always wondered how it would have been different that year if he'd been able to play the whole year. I think it spoke to Kruger to be able to rebound the team.
Yep.
After losing what really was probably their second or third best player, and was a wing that they really didn't have a lot of. Mm-hmm. I think Hester's probably, just because his career kind of started and stopped, that he was probably a little underappreciated this time.
Yep. And then what's your overall thought? So this era, so this is your 4 years in school plus your senior year in high school, like just your general sense of Illinois basketball at the time. I mean, we kind of have covered it here, like, you know, just didn't get there in 94, didn't get there in 95, didn't, you know, it just wasn't getting to where it needed to go. But, you know, when you think of your years in school and Illinois basketball, you're kind of like me. I'm accepted to Illinois in November of 1990 and thinking, oh my God, I'm going to go see three Final Fours and, you know, this and that, and then Bruce Pearl and everything falls apart. What was your general thought of this era of Illinois basketball?
You know, I was definitely, it's funny because the thing that was more exciting at the beginning of this, of my 4 years, was football. The most tragic moment of my time of 4 years there, yep, was, of course, the Penn State game.
Yep.
Like that was, you know, that, and I think that what was worrying was there was a sense that football had a lot of talent, but was blowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Henson had some talent and it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And the worry was that they were both, like, Illinois lost their last 21 games in football. Mm-hmm. When I was there, mm-hmm, like, it wasn't great. I think the last one was that win over Missouri. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that I think the worry, what was exciting, I moved to Los Angeles right after I graduated, and to watch that conference championship team, it definitely made you feel like they made it through, and they, yep, weren't going to go the direction that football was going. Because football, you know this as well as anyone, they had a real moment there in, yep, the McAvick, yep, into Tepper, and they had some really great players, and they got the wrong guy in a, yep, way that you can argue that Weber or especially Gross was the wrong guy. And no offense to those guys, I love Tepper.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really great guy, but obviously the wrong guy for the job. And I think that was a sense when I, my junior year, when they went to the NIT and lost, I was like, man, it's going to be like the football team, isn't it? But it wasn't. And that was a relief.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember. Yeah. I mean, obviously you mentioned football and my brain wants to go like 1,000 good directions, but it's interesting to me that the juxtaposition of the game you mentioned, the Penn State game. So that's November 12th of 94. So you're right. Like that 94 football season, you know, really, you know, again, I've quoted it so many times, lost five games by 21 points within a score.
That's the one that started with the Washington State game at Soldier Field.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Brett Shipline, yeah, missed a 53-yard, yeah, field goal that could have won it. You had Ken, yeah, Dilger tackled at the one. You lost to Penn State when they went 94 yards and scored with 30 seconds left. You know, so, so close to like an 11-1 Big Ten, 11-1 football team, and you finished 7-5. But yeah, so that's the, you're right. You know, you think of November 94, that's also then leading into what's happening with this team. Okay, we have both Kiwan and, Kiwan is the man, but you've got this other class in here, and can we do something with these guys? And that's when the Duke game and the Jared G and all that stuff. So you're right. At the time, you know, you ask somebody in November of 94 about Illinois, and it's like, yeah, this football team is right on the edge of being amazing, and the basketball team is right on the edge of maybe it's falling apart.
Yeah.
And then what happens is the basketball team kind of maintains it and then gets a lot better under Kruger and gets a whole lot better under Self, and the football team,
does not.
We don't have to. Yes.
Yes. Does not.
Okay,
yes.
We have reached the end of our time. I appreciate you doing this with me.
Please, my pleasure. I love talking about this stuff.
Yep. I really enjoy, like, I haven't been surprised how much I enjoy going back through it, because, you know, this was my junior, my sophomore year through the first year out of school for me that, that we just talked about. And so it's, you know, when you're there on campus and you're a student and you're in Crush and you're there for these games, you know, it's a different kind of memory than my other Illinois basketball memories. So it's really fun for me.
You're in the middle of it, right? And you feel like, I mean, you have classes with Matt Helmut, right?
Yes.
You really feel in the middle of it. Yes. Like it really becomes something you have a lot of emotional attachment to.
And I made it through this entire episode without mentioning that I had six total classes with Kiwan because my minor was leisure studies, parks and recreation. Uh-huh. So my major was landscape architecture. My minor was leisure studies. I wanted to design parks. And he was a leisure studies major. And so I got it through the entire episode without mentioning that he once asked for a pencil in class and he used my name. And I lived off the juice of Kiwan Garris knows my first name for at least 2 years. That's the full extent of, you know, again, there's a little something different when you watch the game and then that guy's in your class on Tuesday morning. So,
Yeah, it means something.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure.
Thanks for doing this.
And thanks for doing this series. I love it. I can't wait to hear the rest of it.
You got it.
I'll skip this one, though.
All right. We'll talk soon. Go Illini. Thank you.